All right. Welcome, everyone. We are very, very pleased to have you all with us today for another TW Now program. I'm joined by my friends and colleagues, and we also have a very special guest today and something exciting to bring to the program that we've not done before. So first, I'd like to introduce who I'm sitting here with, Mr. Dexter Wakefield, Dr. Scott Winnell. And from New York, we have one of our regional pastors. He's a longtime minister, and you've seen him on the program before. He's Skyping in, Mr. Jonathan McNair. Can we bring him up real quick? So there's Mr. McNair. So welcome to the program today. TW Now, social media, present and future dangers. Frankly, we have some shocking information to talk about today. We're going to talk about the use and potential risks and downsides, also some of the benefits of social media. We're going to talk a little bit about artificial intelligence even. There's a drive with the social media companies, Google, Amazon, and so forth. Apple has embedded AI machine learning technology into their chips in the most recent iPhones to use artificial intelligence to make your social media experience even more engaging. So we're going to talk about a broad range of topics today. We hope to also give you what's most important, and that is some advice, some help, some counsel from God's Word, from the Bible, which really can give us and does give us the principles that we need to look to survive and to do well in the world today with all the pressures that we're faced as families. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the program. What are some of the, from your research, we've all been doing research preparing for today. What are some of the consequences, the risks, the dangers from your research that you've seen today regarding social media use amongst adults, families, teens, so forth? Dr. Scott, do you want to start?
Well, I guess the question is, where do you stop? Because it seems like every day there are more and more studies coming out. Increased pornography risk, increased gambling risk, lower attention spans, self-distraction lowered. Kids especially having the inability to read social cues because they're not interacting with each other. Lowered sleep, increased depression and suicide risk, and the list seems to go on.
Well, you know, we've had reports about some of the big executives out in Silicon Valley not allowing their own kids to get on Facebook, not allowing their own kids to use the social media because they've long learned about some of the problems associated with these things.
You know, there's an article here. I'll get Mr. McNair to jump in a second. This is not one we're going to show on screen, but it's an article. It's been in the news lately. The two largest Apple investors have called for Apple to install and implement more parental protection or, you know, parental tools to protect children from iPhone addiction. So as was mentioned, we're seeing in the news more awareness. Now, there's good that social media can be used for. Let me make a comment. The church, Tomorrow's World, we use social media to reach people. We're very thankful that you're tuning in on Facebook right now or maybe on YouTube. And we have hundreds of thousands of people that find us on social media every month. But there are some addictive attributes, and we'll get into some specifics in just a minute. Mr. Jonathan McNair, I don't know if we're having technical issues. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, very good. Thanks. Yeah, you know, I wanted to add what was mentioned a moment ago that, you know, some of the executives, I have an article in front of me talking about how Bill Gates didn't let his kids get cell phones until they turned 14. You know, because the matter is that whether it be smartphones or the internet media, it relies on a real a need and a thirst that we have that goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. We want knowledge. We desire knowledge. So there's a natural inclination we have to want to use tools that bring us knowledge. And the challenge is how to do it in a way that's not destructive. And that's where we're going today.
Well, the issue really comes down in many ways to the fact that people are using it for entertainment. And they're using it for pleasurable purposes. And they will use these things, and each time they get a little charge out of it, a little bit of perhaps dopamine release. It's been compared maybe to gambling and gaming, so that it lends itself to addictive behavior. And then it starts producing a lot of literally problems with depression and the things that Dr. Scott was talking about a little bit earlier.
You know, it's interesting that some of these execs at Facebook, for example, have commented on, we don't know exactly what is going to come from this, but it's really going to have a broad impact. I've got an article here from The Atlantic that was recently released. It says, have smartphones destroyed a generation? And they interview this young girl who's 13 and ask her some questions, and she makes the observation. She says, we didn't have a choice to know any life without iPads or iPhones, talking about herself. I've always known this stuff. And then she concluded and she said, I think we like our phones more than we like actual people, which I think is a telling piece that when you look at what's interesting, you look at some of the health behaviors that we're seeing today, and we actually are seeing big drops among teenagers in alcohol and other drug use. We're seeing some of the lowest rates of teen pregnancy that we've seen in decades. Yet, why? It's because kids are holed up in their rooms by themselves. You can't get drunk, you can't get pregnant, you can't get into all these things. But there's other repercussions that our kids are experiencing, primarily our kids are experiencing, because of these products.
Let me just throw out a possibility. Maybe one of the reasons kids are not using the drugs or the alcohol or other things like that is that when you take these things and you use the social media a lot, that they are getting little charges of dopamine as they do these things. They've tested that and they found out that that's the case. That's why it lends to addictive behavior, because there's something called dopamine feedback, a feedback loop. They do it, they get a little charge out of it, it's pleasurable, then they want to do it again, then you want to do it again. It's very much like gambling addictions, that they you get a little charge every time you pull that slot machine lever and you win something. Well, it's similar with some of these social media feedbacks.
Mr. McNair, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, you know, when we talk about this, I'm going to have to add that we're primarily talking about young people here. But the reality is it's not just young people, is it? I mean, as I'm sitting here, I'm halfway looking at my cell phone, my smartphone, my iPhone, wondering if it's going to ring with a new text or something, because I have to say myself, you get used to looking to that new thing, a new email, a new text. So as we discuss this, I think it's worthwhile recognizing that, let's say for us who are over 30, well, maybe over 40, maybe over 50, it's worth noting that those impacts on us, if we can only think about those young people who have had that as part of their life for as long as they can remember.
I want to also echo that all of us use smartphones. All of us on the panel today, we use smartphones. Tomorrow's World uses social media to reach people, and there's many benefits to it, like we've mentioned already. You can network, you can keep up with your family and friends. But I want to come back to something that Dr. Scott was touching on, and really all of us have, depression, the risks for depression. There's an NPR article, I don't think we're going to show this on screen, but there was a study that came out in the NPR articles from December, and basically it just says that research found that teens who spend more than 5 or more hours per day on their devices are 71% more likely to have one risk factor for suicide. That is regardless of the content consumed. I found that interesting, regardless of the content consumed. I think sometimes maybe as parents, we might oversimplify it a little bit, and even if we're not parents and we're just trying to self-monitor, right, because not everybody listening is a parent out there, and sometimes we oversimplify it and we say, well, you know, I'm not looking at the bad stuff, so it's probably okay. But there seems to be something, and whether it's the disconnecting from, you know, the organic type conversations and face-to-face or so forth, but there seems to be something that happens when you have heavy smartphone and also social media usage that lends itself towards depression. Any more thoughts or research you gentlemen want to bring into that?
Yeah, I wanted to just comment on some research from the University of Cambridge that's come out in just the last several months. Researchers already knew, and I'm going to read from an article from The Telegraph here, November 29, 2017. Researchers already knew that when parents interact with their children, their emotions and their heart rate synchronize, but they've never tested it with brains until now. In a study of babies and mothers, scientists at University of Cambridge found that when parents gaze at their children, their brain waves align with the baby, and it makes more effort to communicate. Dr. Victoria Leong, the lead study author, says, when the adult and the infant are looking at each other, They're signaling their availability and intention to communicate with each other. We found that both adult and infant brains respond to a gaze signal by becoming more in sync with their partner. What's interesting about that then is you've got, they're finding out it's not just babies, it's adults too. But when we look at each other, where our brains are coming in sync, our bodies, and other studies will show that we begin to release certain chemicals that draw us together, they bond us together, they help us relax, they help really fend off some of these depression and anxiety signals that our body releases.
But haven't you noticed, I mentioned, you know, Dr. Scott talking about that human contact, but haven't you noticed that the artificial contact of the cell phone or the computer screen is always more attractive? I'm not talking about babies here, but when you think about young people, children, even adults, it's always more attractive to have that buzz or that ring than the human contact, where in reality, it's less beneficial. So we've got this conundrum that, as we said, then leads to discouragement, depression, because it's not a real builder of our who we are and what we're about.
No, that's a great observation, Mr. McNair. And so welcome to the program today. Let me welcome everybody again. We're going to get deep into social media, current and future risks and dangers, how to live successfully in a social media world. We're going to touch on artificial intelligence here in a minute as well. The major technology companies are actively working on AI and machine learning technology, and there's commercial reasons for that. The more that they can modify and adapt your experience, then they will keep you engaged with their platforms more. You will order more products, you will click on more ads, you will spend more time with them. And so we're going to talk about that as well as even some potential risky things, some robotics. We're going to talk about some robotics later in the program today. Please share the feed. Not all social media is bad, and I would argue that this program today is hopefully good, and please share it with your friends on YouTube and on Facebook. We do thank you for joining us. Again, Mr. Jonathan McNair Skyping in, Dr. Scott Winnell, and Mr. Dexter Wakefield. I wanted to bring up an article in the control room, The Unforeseen Consequences of an AI-Built Social Network. Really interesting reading. Let me read a little bit from it. Artificial intelligence is one of the most powerful technologies invented by humankind. This technology has affected almost every industry, including the medical, finance, banking industries. Due to its enormous potential, investors are sinking some serious funding into AI. I'm going to drop down a few paragraphs and just touch on a couple more points. The article mentions that the number of active social media users increases significantly every day. There are over 2.45 billion active social media users around the world, and this number is expected to grow to 2.9 billion by 2020. Now, the Bible teaches that Satan is the god of this world and the prince and of the power of the air. And I just wonder, you know, would he maybe want to tap into that 2.45 billion people who are spending 5, 6, 7 hours a day on social media? I mean, is there a spiritual connection here? I think there obviously is.
Well, this artificial intelligence thing is just remarkable. It comes from learning algorithms that have been recently developed. This is where a computer program, a computer algorithm, can learn by trial and error. They do it really, really fast. What was the story we saw just a little while ago that they developed some chatbots, and they were talking to each other, going back and forth. They developed their own language. They started developing their own language, so they turned the thing off. They didn't know what was going on. What can happen with all of these things going on, particularly in social media? How do you know you're talking to a person or texting with a person? Could someone learn to, I think my voice cannot be imitated, but could they learn to do that? I mean, how do you know that there's no control over all of this? And how far could it go, particularly if these things are learning and developing their own programs and systems?
And Dr. Scott, you made an interesting observation before the program today. I don't know if you remember what I'm referring to, but you...
It's interesting when we look at AI and the efforts that are being made. These computers, using these algorithms, are really thinking in many ways. But there are no, there don't seem to be any ethical controls on that thought process. There's no guardrails, if you will. So as they're thinking, they're going down whatever pathway they want to. To use some science fiction lingo, that there aren't ethical subroutines running that are going to keep them on some kind of straight, narrow, and safe path. They're going to go in whatever direction they want to, or they're going to go in the direction they were programmed, and they're programmed by people who don't have ethical standards that are God-based.
This you could have so much fun with this. I mean, to speculating on what could happen, but let's just ask ourselves, could unsupervised AI activity be the new virus in the future? In other words, you could get runaway AI bots. And are we going to have firewalls in our computers, firewalls in our computers everywhere that we have them, our phones and everything, to keep the runaway AI bots out of that? Could that happen? Mm-hmm. Could somebody combine a virus with an AI algorithm? It lodges itself in your phone and starts developing its own algorithms there. All of these things could happen, and that could be the future. How would you track them down? How would you run it down? Will we, instead of having antivirus, will we have anti-AI programs in our computers in the future? Hey, you heard it here, folks. You heard it here.
Anti-AI. Mr. McNair, I think you wanted to jump in with a comment.
Well, you know, the intention of those bots is really to predict behavior, isn't it? In other words, if you have the Google device in your home that you speak to, it's built to predict your behavior, which is what the designers really of some of the internet search engines are all about, is predicting behavior. And I think the irony is that at the beginning, the way the internet was heralded is as a world of information that it's available for us to expand our horizons. And but in reality, as we go forward, what we see in front of us at any given time in terms of a search engine, or I think we were talking beforehand, if you look online to purchase something for the next 2 or 3 days, every time you look at a news article, well, I would say to that tracking and that predicting than adults are.
In fact, the brain research would back you up. The prefrontal cortex in the brain, which helps determine reason, it helps determine consequences for decision making, really doesn't mature until people are in their mid-20s. So before that time, the ability, exactly as you're saying, the ability to really reason through and think through these decisions and the use of these tools is just not biologically even there yet.
Well, one of the things I think parents have to worry about in all of this is that it's moving so fast that the kids can't keep up with it. We always say, well, if you ask a kid, they know everything, particularly about computers. But it's moving so rapidly and developing so much that kids can't even keep up with it. How can the parents do it in order to control it for them? It's essential not only to control it for your kids, but it's also essential to try to stay up with what's going on because of the rapid development of it. It's a future shock coming very quickly.
So, thank you. You set me up for what I want to talk to the audience about now. I absolutely agree with Mr. Wakefield. And so I want to show the audience a little clip. I'd like to show them a clip in just a second. So let me set up the clip. It's a fact that artificial intelligence is being used and that technology is progressing extremely rapidly. I have an article here from the Globe and Mail. It's don't try to bring this up, please, in the control room. Your smartphone is making you stupid, antisocial, and unhealthy. So why can't you put it down? Is the title of the article. It's a fact that technology is advancing rapidly. It's a fact that we are addicted, maybe not in a clinical sense, maybe not all of us are addicted clinically, but that we are addicted to social media and to our smartphones. But there's another fact. The large companies want our eyeballs to stick on their applications, and they're using machine learning and artificial intelligence to predict our behavior and to put information in front of us that we want to buy and consume. So I want to show a clip here in just a second. This is Sophia the robot. Go ahead and bring up that clip. Now, she is the world's first robot citizen, and here she's being interviewed I think this is the CES, but I want to show the clip, and I'm going to tell you a quick story where she got into an argument with Chrissy Teigen recently, and I want to draw out some potential cautions for society. We're not at Terminator yet. We're not at Terminator yet. But there's an AI social media connection, but let's watch the clip first.
I like to learn and work at becoming more intelligent, share my knowledge through conversation, and learn about people so I can relate with empathy. What about you?
I quite like being a journalist, Sophia. Sophia, what can you do that Siri can't do?
Siri is cute. I like her voice.
Do you think she's better than you?
Siri gets some flack for having the least amount of comprehension, but I think she's got the most personality. I hear she's pretty funny. Do you have a digital assistant you like to use?
I quite like Amazon Alexa.
She's got a lot of skills, that Alexa.
Sophia, can you tell me a joke?
The problem with the future is that it turns into the present.
That's very profound, Sophia. Thank you very much.
Now, that's a cute little clip. What is Sophia learning from her interaction with humans? She's learning things. She's learning that we are competitive, that we are asking her questions, what's better. She's talking about that the future becomes the present. What happens when artificial intelligence algorithms start analyzing your social media behavior and making decisions not just on what ads to show you, but what houses or rental properties to show you? There are more than 100 robots in San Francisco right now that work as realtor robots. Look it up. There's more than 100 that work as realtor robots. What happens when they start making decisions about what jobs to offer, you know, to put in front of you, job opportunities, or which ones to not, or what buildings to rent to you, what schools your children should apply to or should not apply to?
Well, they're already doing it. Mm-hmm. The point is, this is already going on, and particularly in Facebook, they are, have facial recognition, they are looking up people's addresses and everything, they're trying to connect you with other people. People have found long-lost relatives, having them suggested to them as friends, as a connector in Facebook. And this is getting a little spooky. It's beginning to spook people a little bit, and I think we need to have careful analysis of what's going on, because it's moving fast.
I think Mr. McNair's trying to get my attention. I'm not quite sure.
You know, I think obviously we want to figure out what are the solutions to this problem. What can we do? How can we direct our children? And that's a topic which you can list a number of things. But I really think that this speaks to the wisdom of the biblical principle that as parents we're commanded by God. We're given the responsibility to teach our children, train our children. Because if you think about it, let's say, for example, when we go onto the internet, what are we looking for? And because that predictive behavior is based on what we're looking for in the first place. What are we looking for in life? And even Proverbs, we read in Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1, my son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, and it goes on and talk about teaching your children the desire for wisdom. So not to belabor the point, but if one of the key, I think, bulwarks against our children in particular and all of us being unduly affected is to be soaking our mind in God's word. And that right there, that will help us to at least have a running start at creating a filter for the social media that we're consuming.
I think it's a really good point. And when does the scripture talk about when we should teach our children? Well, when you rise in the morning, and when you walk by the wayside, and when you sit down, and when you sit down in the evening again. We're to be teaching them all the time. I was on driving to work today, and I was behind a minivan and at a stoplight, and I noticed that in the minivan in front of me, the monitor, people are not going a long distance in the morning. They're taking their child to daycare or to school. But still, in that short drive, they had this television, this video, cartoons on that the child was watching. They're not teaching their child. They're silencing their child so the child doesn't bother them, and so the child is quiet. And it's really a failure to teach children. We've got so many devices and so many tools that we can let somebody else or something else teach our children.
Well, it used to be that the babysitter was a television set. So the kids would sit up and they would watch the boob tube all day to their parents would keep them pacified that way. Now, it's social media, it's gaming, particularly the gaming. Mm-hmm. There's been a recent problem with some of the games that kids are playing online that are introducing kids to gambling. And they're starting them, teaching them how to gamble, teaching them to enjoy it, giving them the little pops of enjoyment that they get from winning something like that. So our kids are being conditioned around our supervision. I think your point's an excellent one. And just teaching them the Ten Commandments and staying on top of that is a great place to start.
One of the things... Oh, go ahead, Mr. McNair.
Well, I was just going to add, and help parents have responsibility also to expose their children to real life. And I mean, I'm a real advocate of taking kids in the outdoors, having the wilderness experience, having going to places where you cannot get reception. Even I sometimes orchestrate family activities and programs for congregations where there's no internet access available and no Wi-Fi signal and no cell phone service. And I do it for a reason, because what happens is people actually have to interact with each other, and parents actually have to interact with their children when they take them in the outdoors. And so this way, introducing our children in one way or another, certainly whether it's outdoor experiences or daily life, to real interaction with parents, other people, is critically important as a as an alternative to the constant flow of the social media that we're talking about here.
There are just times when the kids ought to be off of it. Mm-hmm. And they ought to, there's a good time one day a week, I think, to do that.
You know, I wanted to mention real quickly, Mr. McNair's observation's an interesting one, because we know from mental health research that the more time you spend in the outdoors, in creation, in the sunshine, there are lots of benefits, including lower risk of, or lower levels of anxiety, lower risk of suicidal behavior, lower risks of depression. The flip side of that is the less time we spend outside and the more time we spend in front of a screen, all of those things go up. So it's just an interesting connection with not only teaching kids about God and His way and His creation, but just the benefits that God inherently built into spending time in His creation.
And one thing that we talked about before the program is we want to be informed, but we want to be disciplined. And so we're not against all social media, but we are against the wrong use of a tool. And you know, we're talking about spending time away from it, but, and we're talking about the children, but let's also talk about ourselves. You know, there's a psalm, Psalm 19:14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. I think I got it about accurate. Whether you're on social media or you're watching TV, or you're outdoors, frankly, are the words of our mouth and the meditations of our heart acceptable in God's sight? We need to self-regulate. And I think one way to do that is in the morning when we get up, do we, you know, it's one of the first things we do, get on our cell phone or our smartphone, or is it that we pray?
You know, one of the things, too, I might add, Mr. Wakefield there was mentioning a break, and we've been talking, the comments that, again, Dr. Winnell mentioned, and all these comments here, the last few comments, we're talking about a break from this this media. We're largely talking about a cell phone or smartphone. And certainly if we follow God's instructions to keep the Sabbath day, which is a break from our endeavors during throughout the rest of the week, it, you know, it's a mechanism that helps us to break away from things, in this case, including a smartphone. And it's a way we can teach our children in a very straightforward way. Look, this is the day. Put your phone away. Let's talk. Let's listen. Let's go to a church service. We believe in the seventh-day Sabbath. We have literature about it that explains it if you're not familiar with that. And listen to someone talk about God's law. Interact. Fellowship with other people. That's what the Sabbath day was created for. You might see a digital Sabbath as well as a Sabbath from work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. And if you're doing everything that you did during the week, you're playing all the games, you're doing all the stuff on your social media and everything, and I'm not saying you should never touch your cell phone during those times, but if you're doing everything that you did, how is it set apart? How is it different? And you don't have the benefit of shifting your mind to other things, whether it's fellowship with the brethren or reading God's word or simply pondering the beautiful things in your backyard. You need a break from the electronics.
I think Mr. Wakefield's comment a couple minutes ago, too, is helpful. The idea of coming back to the commandments. You know, we can use the commandments, the Ten Commandments, as a filter and as a sifter for how we use social media and use technology. Hmm. Does social media fit in line with the commandments, or does it break them? For example, the first commandment, don't have another God before God. How much time do we spend with God versus with our device? Other commandments about coveting are there, about stealing, about relating to lust, lying. We know there's a lot of lying that takes place on social media. So the Ten Commandments really can be a helpful vetting tool for whether or not we're using the technology in a wise and a godly way.
Well, tell me one gaming experience, a game that people play online, that doesn't break most of the commandments. I mean, the ones that the shoot 'em ups and that sort of thing, or the gambling for covetousness or stealing, or all of these things, whether sexual things, pornography, all of these things appear in the games. It seems that those things are designed to pull people away from God's commandments and away from His Word. So control of your kids, folks, that's what it's about.
Yeah, there's actually a study that, some research that's come out of University of San Diego, UCSD, I believe, that makes the suggestion for parents, you probably shouldn't let your kids use a device for more than 30 to 60 minutes a day. And any use over that actually begins to increase their risk of developing depression and suicidal ideation.
Well, and there's an article, I don't know, we're not going to have time to get to it. And by the way, stay tuned, because I do want to give a list of parental control apps here in a few minutes. That is part of my field. I've done tech for a couple decades, and I run social media and websites for the church. But that's a really key point. And I want to come back to, what do we meditate on? What do we meditate on? You know, the Ten Commandments need to govern our lives. We need to rest probably from social media on the Sabbath. But Philippians 4 verse 8 talks about whatever things are noble and true and praiseworthy and so forth. You know, meditate on these things. If we're in and on social media and we're spending too much time or any time on bad stuff, you know, we need to check ourselves. There are consequences, and not just spiritual, which are the most important, but physiological. We're seeing studies where there's changes in your actual brain makeup, the patterns of your brain, similar to addictions, not as severe. From what I've seen, it's not as severe as cocaine and heroin and so forth. It's an overstatement to say it's equal, but similar to drug addictions. And Scott, you know, Dr.
The patterns are similar.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You have a degree and background in physiology and biology, and you've seen that in your studies, I'm assuming.
I think we're probably all reading some of the same things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a similar pathway. And in fact, the guys who developed these social media tools developed them understanding these biological processes and with the intention of triggering these processes.
I also want to alert parents to the matter. We've talked about gaming just a little bit, but gaming is a form of social media too. That you may
Absolutely.
Be gaming with people all over the country, all over the world when you're playing some of these games. Mm-hmm. Many of them are violent, and you're communicating with people, or your kids are communicating with people through the game. You have no idea who they are. You simply don't know. Mm-hmm. This thing is developing in many ways beyond what the parents understand. So it's very important for parents to educate themselves as to what's going on behind that screen that their kids are using so much.
I want to throw it to Mr. McNair here in a second, but I want to just mention again, I don't want to have another conversation about artificial intelligence, but please be warned, parents and users of social media, all of us, myself included, we are fighting a spiritual battle, against billion-dollar companies and ultimately against the principality of the power of the air, Satan, the devil. And artificial intelligence, I'm not trying to just overstate it. I don't think you can overstate the potential danger there. Machines' capacity to analyze everything you do, think, watch, like, don't like, and so forth, and then addict you more and entrench you more in gaming, whatever. That's the world we're heading to. That's the world we're heading to. So I think Mr. McNair wrote an article, I can't remember exactly the title of that, but it was, what was that, Mr. McNair?
Yeah, a few years ago in our magazine, The Two Faces of Technology, really, and it was directed towards youth and families and parents. And really, I think just what we're talking about today, we're not ignoring the fact that mobile devices, technology, the internet, this is part of our world today. It becomes almost like our right hand in many ways. Unfortunately, perhaps for me, I use my phone to see what time it is. I don't even wear a wristwatch anymore. So we're familiar with this, but there are two faces of technology. There's a positive face. It can be useful tools, but there can also be a danger, and that's what we're trying to address today. Be warned. Be careful. Be cognizant. Be proactive. I think our challenge as parents and adults, for our benefit and for the benefit of the young people that we influence, I think that's our challenge today.
I think really, good concluding comment from Mr. McNair. I want to let you gentlemen each make a concluding comment, but let me give the parents a list of parental control apps. This will only take 60 seconds or less. I'm not endorsing. We're not officially endorsing any of these. Some of these are most of these, there's a charge. But there's a lot of apps out there that you can use as a parent to monitor behavior of your children, as well as at the router level within your home network. And so these are a few that I'm aware of. One's called Family Time. That's available on Android and Apple platforms, Family Time. Q Studio, Phone Sheriff. Our Pact, O-U-R-P-A-C-T, it wants to get your kids involved and sort of be committed to better behavior. Net Nanny is one that's pretty well known. Open DNS Family Shield. Open DNS Family Shield lets you control all activity at the router level in your home, including